Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Tulsa.
What the fuck is Tulsa?
It's a city in Oklahoma.
I know it's a city in Oklahoma. I can read a map.
This is the Extra Hot Rate Podcast, episode 433 for the week of November 14th, 2022. I am Best Ribs in Town, David T. Cole, and I'm here with industrialist Sarah D. Bunting.
Nobody knows.
Shot Queen Tara Ariano.
Woo!
And obvious wig Devendra Hardawar.
Pay no attention to the raccoon on my head.
Honestly, two of us could have been obvious wig because there's more than one in the show, but we'll get into it. Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Our guest today, he is a senior editor at Engadget and a co-host of the Filmcast. You have heard him here before. It's Devendra Hardawar. Welcome back, Devendra.
Devendra.
Happy to be here.
We're thrilled to have you to talk about Paramount Plus's new drama, D. We'll get into that too. Tulsa King, in which 25 years ago, Dwight Manfredi, Sylvester Stallone, was incarcerated on mob-related charges, but since he didn't snitch, he's pretty sure that upon his release, the family is going to set him up in a sweet gig. Joke's on him. They're sending him to Tulsa on vague orders to, like, mob it up a little. Fortunately for him, the cabbie who picks him up at the airport happens to roll past a weed dispensary, and that gives Dwight an idea. The show was created by Taylor Sheridan, who also created Yellowstone. He wrote the pilot, apparently in 24 hours or so, he claims.
I can believe that. Yeah.
Alan Coulter directed it, who is very well known for his many episodes of Boardwalk Empire and The Sopranos. Let's do the chat and check-in, so named for Devendra's very own co-host on the Filmcast. Devendra, should our listeners watch Tulsa King?
Watch one episode just to see the weirdness of this show, like the most dad show ever made, a confusing mishmash of mob stuff and Sylvester Stallone. I had fun watching it. I will not be watching anymore. But I can certainly believe the show was written, this episode in particular, was written in one day. I can feel that in my bones.
Sarah.
To my utter and profound surprise, yes, I watched two episodes. I'm going to stick with it. I don't know.
Okay, Dave.
I was expecting the Chen check-in to be a no, but I'm going to go with, I think it might be worth your time.
Yeah, I had basically the exact same reaction as Sarah, although I did not watch the second episode yet, but I kind of liked it. So let's get into it. Love it when we have a diversity of opinions. Devendra, when I suggested this topic to you, your response was that you didn't know much about it, but that if it was a Taylor Sheridan joint, you were in.
Absolutely.
Tell us what it is about the Sheridan oeuvre that you vibe with and what didn't work for you in Tulsa King.
I think Taylor Sheridan, like, looking at his first few screenplays, right? Dude had Sicario. He had, Wind River. He had a really great run in terms of movies. And then he moved over to TV and started doing really well once Yellowstone really kicked off. So I was like, okay, I like his vibe. He also did Hell or High Water. I loved all the movies he wrote, or at least the early ones. I would at least check out a new show that he's making because it seems like he's making this little, like, TV empire of shows set in flyover states, basically. Like, the stuff America typically ignores, he's trying to make dramas around that. I was like, okay. And I like Sylvester Stallone. I think his later stuff, while not always successful, it can be really interesting. I look at him in the, like, in the Creed movies, and he's doing some tremendous work there. So there were enough pieces to make me interested in this show. And then watching it just feels like It feels like he had this idea maybe in his drawer, like in his sock drawer for a while, you know, like just floating around for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And once he hit it big, like he may be getting all sorts of contracts to like make more stuff, you know, shows out there.
Right, right.
So yeah. It feels like the kernel of this idea was around for a while. Certainly makes sense that he may have written that pilot in a day. And I could just feel it, you know. It feels badly put together. There's the opening when Stallone's character is getting out of jail and is just like clearly not in the same place, like not on New York streets, like the camera is showing us, but he's just sighing and rolling his eyes at the modern life around him. SoulCycle classes and people in VR headsets. And it's all so ridiculous. I thought it was just, I thought it was kind of hilarious.
What's iced coffee?
What? Yeah. It's a hilarious fish out of water story. I think the kernel of this actual show, the idea that he was somebody who was in jail, did his time, thought he would be supported and wasn't, that could be interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some drama there, but even that first meeting with his team, including Herc from The Wire. And I look at him like, I know you don't have hair, Herc.
No,
I know. I've never seen you with hair.
He hasn't had hair since the early 2000s.
Yeah. So it's like, what? Treat me with some respect.
Yes.
TV show. Okay. Like, we know this. We've seen him in other mob stuff. We know what he looks like. You don't have to do this. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is a show that feels really sloppily put together, but Stallone is having fun and he's really watchable. He's a charismatic guy.
Yeah.
Even now that he's 76 years old and he can like barely move and all the stuff he did to his body is just like really starting to show now.
Yeah.
He is still very watchable. I think he's funny at times, but this is a show that basically it feels like this premise existed just to get him in a TV show format, like a fish out of water in a new town. He can go on some hijinks, have some adventures, sleep around with women half his age who are recoiled once they hear his actual age. Like that was hilarious. And it mm-hmm. seemed like he was even having fun with that.
Yeah.
The show doesn't take any time to deliver a plot. It's just like, hey, a weed dispensary. I can make money from that. Or this building, I can go here. Everything just happens by coincidence. Nothing is organic. So it just feels really sloppy as a show. But I agree, it is watchable, guys. I can't keep doing it.
I will say this about this show. I think this show is just meant to be a collection of moments that you sort of have a sort of TV-sized fist bump to.
Mm. Yeah.
And so the fact that they just get to it, I think is an advantage for a show of this type. Does it elevate it as a TV show when compared to other great TV shows? No, it does not. But I think unto itself, it's not a bad way to go, especially when you got Mumble Mouth Stallone as your lead.
Yeah.
Like, just get there. Don't have him carry a lot of the emotional weight of what's going on. Just have him get to fucking Tulsa, be the king, let's get going. I feel like that might have not been a bad idea here.
I feel like just watching this, it's a checklist. It's a checklist of every TV show I've seen before. It's like, yes, let's get the characters in play. Let's get the sidekick. Let's get the setting set. Romantic interest. Like it's all there. Yeah.
Including Stallone himself. Is this interesting enough on its own? Perhaps not. What's going to put asses in the seat? Oh, I know, Stallone. Because there's like a list of older actors who would be much better at the role, but not at getting people in the seats, I bet.
I think that this is the primary advantage of this show, actually, is this completely confident pacing.
Mm-hmm.
That is like my primary note. It's like, why is this working? Like, I have so many other notes that are like, they know that Tulsa is like a proper fucking city with sports franchises and shit, right? Yeah. Like, I've been there. They have microbreweries. It's not a goddamn, like, this motel. Only on TV and in the movies does that motel exist. That it's like Buffalo playing poker. Like, guys, that's so condescending.
But you're right. Tulsa, as seen in this episode, is almost like the town from Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
It's one highway. Yeah.
Or it's like Epcot Midwest. Like, all right, like, fine. But that's, first of all, that's how the character, that's how the general sees it.
Right.
And second of all, I don't think there's actually anything wrong with just being like, this is the premise and we're going to keep riffing on the premise mm-hmm. and we're going to have Martin Starr making what the fuck faces mm-hmm. and we're going to throw in Michael Beach as someone's dad because like he shows up and I was like, ooh, sign of quality. Mm-hmm. And like I got to the end of the first episode, we had a second episode available and I was like, I actually... care like Sly Stallone is having a ton of fun.
Yeah,
this is not good as we like. This is not a prestige TV, and there is a lot of like,
yeah,
pronouns. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Kind of dad TV shit that you're just like, oh fuck off! Like yeah. really? Like what's a venti? Like Paulie Walnuts already did this 25 years ago.
Yes, yes.
But with that said, like it just has this like bizarre, almost daring you to not laugh yeah. at it mm-hmm. energy mm-hmm. that I'm just like, I don't like, I laugh at dad jokes too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got me.
I'm going to recommend the show to my dad and he will enjoy it a lot.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. At the end of the scene at the beginning where the Long Island guys, which also like they drive him from Northern Pennsylvania through Manhattan, to Long Island.
Yeah. Just going to give you a look. Jesus. Just going to give you a look. Okay.
okay.
In this but economy?
Leaving that aside. So he's on Long Island at the boss's house. They tell him they're sending him to Tulsa. And I turned to Dave and said, this is a sitcom premise. And then we continued watching and it kind of was yes. like, it was yes. really, yeah. the character reminded me a lot of Chili Palmer, the John Travolta character in Get Shorty, where he's just like, he comes to a new place, he susses it out mm-hmm. super fast,
yep.
he figures out what his advantage is, and he just starts, like, he gets down to it. Like Sarah said, I don't have a problem with that. Like, if we know that he's going to succeed, there's really no point having, like, spending a whole episode where he's like, well, I'm not going to Tulsa when we know he is because it's called Tulsa King. Or, like, there's so many
yeah.
ways
yeah. Yeah.
they could have, like, dragged their feet and made this dumber.
It was just, it's Tulsa, comma, King, question mark? No.
no, money down. Yes, exactly. So,
that
yeah.
That scene with him in the dining table, like, with his mob people, mm-hmm. starts with him fighting and punching a dude. He's like, I'm not going to Tulsa.
Yeah.
30 seconds later. Well, I guess I'm going to Tulsa.
Exactly.
yeah. I guess.
Yeah. He steps over yes. the guy he yeah. cold cocked and then yeah. he leaves. Like, these are absolutely like skits.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. I completely agree with Devendra. Like, this was in his drawer and it was like not quite good enough to pitch. And then mm-hmm. when he was like sitting on fat stacks of Yellowstones,
mm-hmm.
they were like, got anything else? And he's like, well, there's this shit that I wrote in a day when I had an edible and a half and couldn't mm-hmm. leave the house. And they were like, well, if we can get Stallone to do it, fuck it.
Yeah.
And they mm-hmm. did. And I do not hate it.
Yeah. I think that I feel like the marketing of the show is not doing it favors because it definitely makes it look like it's a tough guy show for tough guys. And that's mm-hmm. part of it. But they're like, you know, Sarah said, this is not a prestige show. And it's not like it's a very kind of knock around like yes. FX caliber.
Perfect word.
Justified. Yes, I mean, I keep going back to Elmore Leonard comparisons, but it has a lot of those vibes. But anyway, one place where they do lean real hard on the prestige trappings is the opening credits. And Dave, I just want you to talk about that sure. a little bit because choices yeah. were made and I don't agree with them.
Yeah. So they're doing that thing where they're juxtaposing, you know, scenes of his former life in and around New York with the things that will happen in Tulsa, mm-hmm. you know, it's not the road of Park Avenue. Oh, it's also, you know, the tractor going down the field and, mm-hmm. and with the combine and all that kind of stuff. And they have a whole bunch of pieces like that. But one of them, and they're all animated in that taking a still and just animating separate parts of it.
Yeah.
It's not actual true motion. They are doing it digitally. And one of the ones they choose to do is, I guess it's supposed to be Stallone in a rearview mirror. They animate his eyebrows going up. Do not animate organic no. things that fast, that much. It was so creepy
it's
and
really
funny.
Off-putting.
I had to stop. I said, Dara, I know we're only at the credits. We have to stop. I have to actually record this in case they fix it the next episode. Mm-hmm. It was so great and bad. It made me laugh out loud.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But just speaking to what Tara was saying, where like this is, you know, trying to be prestige adjacent. But it's also got trappings of a lot of lazy things that came before it. There's a point about halfway through where I turned to Tara and I said, all right, so we've seen Stallone come in. and he is a fish out of water. He's getting his legs back. When are we going to be introduced to his quirky character affectation?
Mm-hmm.
Because this character really seems like he needed one. Like, he did have the whole thing where, what's a phone?
Yeah.
Yeah, what that? I don't know.
But
what,
then by the end of the episode, he got one. It's like, well, I guess it's not that.
That wasn't it. And then there's one point where he's kojacking the lollipop for 5 minutes. I'm like, is this it? They're just going to steal an affectation from another show?
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for it. I still think it's coming. I still think it's that kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like him asking for New York things in Tulsa. Mm. Like, he does at the bar, right?
Yes.
He's not going to get, he asked for a wine, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, the credits, whoever did the credits was told it was The Leftovers, and it's actually like Oklahoman Exposure.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's fine. I love Northern Exposure. Mm-hmm. I like Sly Stallone. I'm happy that he's, you know, staying out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good character actors and like quadtertiary Sopranos people in here, like, you know, Benny Fazio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay. I mean, this is such a light lift too. Mm-hmm. Like, you do not have to be paying attention because it's so skitsy. So yeah, I mean, I am shocked and that I liked it and am recommending it, but I do. And
I'm shocked to be the odd one out here, maybe with the not recommend. But you know what? I feel you guys. Like, I did enjoy watching it. It just feels like I feel the laziness. You know, you brought up Justified, Tara. Mm-hmm. And in the grand scheme of shows like this, right? You've got Justified on top. Like, I freaking love that show.
Yep.
Somewhere in the middle, you have something like Jack Reacher, which is a really, really fun and enjoyable show that knows what it is and can be like a fun action thing. And then maybe a couple steps below that, you've got this, where it's like, you like Stallone? Maybe you'd like this fish out of water story.
Yep. Do you like flat places?
Yes, so flat. You like cows?
Yeah, this show absolutely lives in the so you liked Reacher, you might enjoy this level of television. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad loved Reacher, so yeah.
This is 100% dad show.
For sure,
like,
yes.
Absolutely, you know, if you had to pay for TV shows, this would be under the tree like crazy this year for dad.
Oh,
because
my God,
it is like 100% dad show. But the smart thing they did was they surrounded Dad Energy Man, Sylvester Stallone, with a lot of good character actors that were doing a really good job with what they're given. Like, Martin Starr as the dispensary owner being bewildered by Stallone coming in and, like, running a protection racket on something which I don't think he understands is kind of legal. But, you know, like, and that's just, like, bowled over and it still happens.
Right.
And there is a world in which Martin Starr inhabits that character realistically is, like, no small feat. And those are the characters that can keep people like me and Tara and Sarah on watching this show, because Stallone can't carry it. Like, it is fun to see Stallone doing this stuff, but he moves and talks like a tank. So he's the least dynamic thing about this show.
Yeah. Dave and I saw a movie a few years ago called The Last Stand.
Oh, that movie rules. I love it so much.
It was a few years old at that time, and now it's, you know. But it's an Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle where he's, like, classic Schwarzenegger. He's, like, nonsensically the sheriff of this small town. No one ever says, why is this Austrian our sheriff? Like, never comes up. But he's, like, at this point, he's old. And so many of his scenes, his action scenes, are just him, like, driving around shooting at people from his truck. And it's like, you know what? I respect that, and I feel like this show also, like Dave said, they know Sylvester Stallone's, like, physical limitations, but they also know his acting limitations, and I think, like, the cast is, you know, doing a huge amount of heavy lifting in a very smart way. Like, the construction of this is very, very clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does some smart things, too. Like, there's a setup where he's, like, he gives his cabbie friend a wad of cash, and is like, go buy me a car.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that's not gonna happen. not in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You don't walk in as a black man in that, you know, state and buy a car with cash. And actually, the thing that I predicted happened, and I had a lot of fun seeing the result of that and seeing him just, like, kick that asshole's, you know, face in.
Yeah. There's also some low-hanging fruit that they, like, grab and pulp effectively. Like, this, you know, white guy with the pile of dreads that finally someone's like, guy, really? And that Bodie's actual name is Lawrence. And you're like, okay, yeah, these are gimmies, but they did it right. Like, there are shows that will that will go around like easy jokes. And you're like, mm-hmm. just do it. You know how to do this. Yeah. So yeah, into mm-hmm. it. I am my own dad, apparently.
It's time to go around the dial, talking about things we've been watching recently on TV, not necessarily recent TV. Tara, you're first.
The Big Brunch was one of the shows that I said I was potentially into when we did our winter TV preview last month.
This is because of the word brunch.
Yeah. Fine. Yes, that's true. You said it at the time. It's still
your
true.
Your point.
Yes, it is a brunch cooking competition on HBO Max. And when all I knew about it was the title and that I enjoy brunch, Dave, I was interested in the idea of a cooking show focusing on my favorite meal. But it turns out it has another purpose, which is to elevate chefs who have specific ways they are making a difference in their communities and for whom the $300,000 cash prize would hugely change their lives and their work, which is a fine idea. The problem is, for some of them, the difference they want to make is like, I want to write a cookbook or I want to support sustainable food sourcing in my town. And then there's the one guy who's like, I run a pay what you can restaurant out of a church and the church is for sale. And it's sort of like, okay, give this money to this guy. Let's end this because that's the best cause, but whatever. On top of that, this is one of those competition shows that's very much trying to remind you of the Great British Bake Off. It is very gentle. It's very positive. The contestants help each other. Making It was another one like this. Great Pottery Throwdown, I hear. I have not watched it. I'm not saying that's a bad model to have in mind or that I need all of my reality competitions to be cutthroat. I like the gentle humor of Bake Off as much as the next guy, but Americans can't quite get that style right or convincing for me. And B, not even Bake Off purely works on that level anymore. Like, mostly what people have felt about the current season of Bake Off is mad. But enough about that. The Big Brunch is shot in the same expensive-looking documentary style as HBO Max's other competition shows, like Finding Magic Mike, even F-Boy Island, believe it or not. But that only made me realize how long it's been since we got new episodes of Legendary, which is a much better show. Big Brunch is not for me. It's not brunchy enough. Okay, I realize that sounds crazy, but the first episode kind of seemed like some people were leaning too hard on the unch part and just like making whatever they wanted. Whereas I would have liked to see some tighter parameters on the main challenge, like we want to see your take on the classic brunch food pancakes. And then it's like, okay, well, this could be, you know, any number of things, you know, go from there. All that said, I'm not a food show person. If you're looking for a less aggro version of Top Chef, this might make a nice long weekend binge. It's only 8 episodes, so check it out if any of that sounds good to you. Speaking of any of that sounding good, I don't know. Dave and I finished this 5th season of The Crown. It is good enough. I will be staying to see how it ends in season 6, but mm-hmm. wow, they Same. Have just lost absolutely all trust in their audience to understand subtext, like, to kind of an embarrassing degree, like the ship, the TV, the other divorcing couples, the Hong Kong handover, all of this is symbolic of the family. We fucking get what? It. I promise we get it. Like,
oh, you yeah. left out the point where the queen actually says,
yes,
the TV is like a metaphor for our lives. Yes. It's actually like the cold
dialogue.
Open.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And then Imelda Staunton is like she sort of like looks at the camera like, yes, really?
Yeah.
Brutal.
It, on top of all that, most boring season yet, but yeah. Yes, I have to see how it ends.
Well, I got some bad news for you for Die Hard.
If you found season 3 of Atlanta too frustratingly experimental and were not sure if you were going to come back for the final season, you should. It is season 4 is more the show that you remember. It is funny, poignant, weird, really great. No spoilers, but the episode where we see Earn in therapy and also what he's not telling his therapist is a real high point of the season and the series, honestly. And the finale is sneakily moving in a way I was not expecting. It's a wonderful show. I really miss it. So all episodes of Atlanta are out now. If you have Hulu, they are all streaming there. And for my plugs, Interview with the Vampire, which we talked about when it premiered, that has ended for the season. I talked to Sam Reed, who played Lestat, at VanityFair.com, and The Good Fight, which we are about to hear more on, also ended last week, and I spoke to Christine Baranski about that series finale as well, and both of those are at VanityFair.com.
All right, Devendra, I think I know what you're going to be talking about.
Yes, The Good Fight. My wife and I just finished that series, and we were... I feel like it's always kind of a moving thing, you know, when you've been following a show for several years and you get to the last episode and you're like, this is kind of it. Especially since this is a spinoff of The Good Wife. I don't know if we're going to ever be seeing these characters again. And I just want to say, I really enjoyed the season, even if it felt a little obtuse at times and maybe a little too experimental. I love these characters. I love the Kings. I will watch whatever they produce. So I'm just happy that the show had, you know, a good chance to run. Like, it went through several lead characters. It lost some major actors that were like there at the beginning. But I think overall, like, it is a great follow-up to The Good Wife. And really, I think the most poignant show of our times, like the one actually speaking to the politics of now, how we're feeling as a society. I think it's always been very smart. So I was sad to see it go. And I know you guys talk about it quite a bit, I hope. It's something I try to recommend to everybody, even on the film cast. And, you know, I can't get my hosts to watch any King shows, but maybe, maybe if I just keep hammering at them, they'll start The Good Fight or The Good Wife or something, or Evil. Come on.
Yeah, what other show recently, like, could switch between the absurd and the surreal and the realistic quite as deftly as this?
Yeah. Maybe Atlanta.
Yeah,
of.
That's true.
Like,
that's
if you liked Atlanta, it's a different type of show.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, it's got a lot of shared mannerisms, and it really works when you don't think it should. Like, on paper, you're like, whoa, this is, like, I'm going to get severe whiplash. And but it kind of all mixes together in a weirdly, you know, cohesive way.
Yeah. When I was preparing for my interview, I rewatched the first, I got through most of the first four seasons before they actually got the interview on the books, and I didn't quite make it through the first five. But I certainly fast forwarded all of the Jonathan Coulton bits because I don't need to see those again. But it holds up. Like, even the, it really takes you back to like how you felt each of those years that they were on, because it's a different feeling each year, like truly. And I think that's, as you both said, like, the show captures that, the just the surreality of our times.
And it really is like Atlanta, in that even though it's a procedural and Atlanta is not, it absolutely, it knows what it's doing. So even if you aren't sure what it's doing, it doesn't care. And if you trust it, your trust is rewarded in both cases.
I've spent so long watching King shows where I'm like, I will go with you wherever you go. I will trust in you all. Like, even Brain Dead, a show nobody has seen. I'd be like, only me and maybe TV nerds like you guys have seen Brain Dead, but that thing was fantastic and also kind of like was ahead of the election and really like spoke to how we were all feeling back then. Maybe we'll get a sequel to that. Who knows, at some point. But I love the Kings, and I wish only the best for them at this point.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do next. And for your plugs.
Oh, sure. You can find me on Twitter, as long as Twitter is still around, and I'm at Devendra on Twitter. I write about technology and stuff like that at Engadget.com. So you can find me there and on the Engadget podcast. And I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast, at TheFilmcast.com.
Woo! Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello. Peacock came out with Prince Andrew : Banished. It's been out for a few weeks. It does scratch a certain let's compare what the Crown says happened to our own timeline itch when it comes to Prince Andrew, whom the Crown has made sure to portray as a spoiled, toothy lout with terrible bangs, but without going overboard, at least so far. Banished feels a little long at 80-ish minutes, which is weird given that at times it also feels a little rushed. Like, the demise of the marriage to Sarah Ferguson and their relationship in the aftermath is like underlined, but then not explained. So that's more elliptical than I would like. I don't think it is quite well made enough to qualify as one of those properties that either needed half the runtime or twice as much. But I did find myself wanting more on the actual mechanics of his banishment. Like, what does stripping Andrew of his royal and military titles mean for his day to day? And if everyone in the line of succession ahead of him is like eaten by a grizzly or something, does his removal from frontline royal duties get reversed? Does it affect his eligibility? Do grizzlies not eat the canceled? What is the situation there? So, Banished is probably an excuse mostly to draft off the Crown's current buzziness with tabloid assets already on hand at Universal HQ. But director Jamie Crawford, who also did Trainwreck, Woodstock 99, which was not great, but watchable, is competent at the Assembly and seems to understand that baked-in interest in his subject will do a lot of work for him. And a couple of the talking heads do get into detail about, like, incorrect assumptions about secondary royals' finances or analysis of the transactional, quote, friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. You won't learn nothing from it, probably. And given that it's the same old pictures of Epstein and Ghislaine over and over again that you've seen a gazillion times and shit like this, it's as, you know, good a sit as you can manage given the monsters at the center of it. I am not mad that I spent the time, but it is not a must for you to watch. If it is a must for you to save money on true crime, hey, great news coming up in this plug. I have a true crime shop. It's called Exhibit B Books, and true crime books and ephemera is all I sell. And if it is tagged new and notable, it is 15% off for the rest of the month. And that includes gift cards, by the way. So just fill your cart. It'll do the math for you. And if you spend more than $50, shipping is free. So get after it. ExhibitBBooks.com. Link in the show notes.
All right. Coming up on Extra, Extra Hot Great this Friday, it is Christmastalgia. What Christmas specials of yesteryear should be brought back, updated, and how is that going to work? We go through our choices, we figure it out, and we present them to you, our dear supporters. You can be a supporter if you visit patreon.com/extrahotgreat and join up this week. And next week on EHG Prime, it is Fleshman is in Trouble, and we welcome first-time guest Maris Kreisman. Don't miss it. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon user submission this week. Let's hear it.
Greetings, Dave, Tara, Sarah, and valued guest. Today I'm submitting for canon consideration the Ectoplasmic Panhellenic Investigation. This was the eighth episode of the first and only season of The Middleman, a sci-fi dramedy that ran on ABC Family in 2008. Since the show aired 14 years ago and about five people watched it at the time, a synopsis is in order. The Middleman centers around Wendy Watson, played by the criminally underemployed Natalie Morales. Wendy is a 20-something starving artist who takes a temp job that turns out to be a cover for a Men in Black-like organization that fights threats, quote, extra, infra, and juxta-terrestrial. She works with her boss, the ruggedly wholesome Middleman, and Ida, their cantankerous android assistant. Wendy also shares an illegal sublet with another young photogenic artist named Lacey, who is her best friend. The main plot of this episode kicks off when Wendy and the Middleman intercept a strange 911 call.
Reitman University Campus Police, what's your emergency?
Dude! Oh god, oh god, oh god, there is some seriously crunked up stuff over here! It's a ghost! A ghost! She's coming after me!
Ghosts? Sweet.
Debbie, there's nothing sweet about ghosts. Spirits only linger in this world when they have unfinished business. Violent, vengeful business.
But Casper's such a friendly guy.
It may all seem like light and magic at first, but the next thing you know, the walls are bleeding, and you've got 25 pregnant women running around screaming, Mary! 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 And clawing their eyes out with knitting needles, while your own hair grows to 3 times its length and tries to strangle you.
Well, that sounds specific.
They interview a fraternity pledge named Lewis, who claims to have seen ghosts while sneaking into the Omega Theta Nu sorority house in drag as a pledge stunt. Wendy infiltrates the sorority and meets two of its members, Eleanor, who seems to be running the place, and Allie, who is initially suspicious of Wendy. Wendy discovers that the ghosts seen by Lewis are the spirits of the sorority's executive board, but she also meets the board members walking around in the flesh. Wendy wins Allie's trust, and Allie tells her that the board has been acting strange recently. In particular, they don't know the sorority's secret cheer anymore.
Sisters now, we welcome you!
Act like everything is normal. What? Just keep smiling. This may be our only chance to talk. They're watching me.
They don't know the cheer.
They don't know any of the cheers or remember any of our traditions. Not even the Omega handshake. That's what I wanted to tell you, but Eleanor won't let me be alone with anyone. The president brought her in as some kind of emergency pledge 2 weeks ago, right around the time that the whole executive board started acting weird. She's just a pledge, but they're acting like she's in charge. Eleanor is behind this. I know she is.
Behind what?
Wendy and the middleman discover that the last thing the ghosts remember is being lured to the basement of the physics building, and when the middleman goes there to investigate, he finds Eleanor and gets a classic villain monologue.
Gatekeeper? Gatekeeper. If you can hear me, I'm looking at 5 comatose females of a decidedly bookish type.
I resent that.
Eleanor Draper.
I see that you've met my friends from the physics dorm.
Stop right there.
Well, don't you want the grand tour before you shoot me?
I know exactly what this is. A quantum processor. You built this to project the souls of your little friends here into the bodies of the Omegas. I don't get it. You're obviously brilliant. Why attack a sorority?
The Omegas are hedonistic, entitled...
Wouldn't take you, would they, Eleanor?
I hate those exclusive sluts! So I built this machine and selected the bodies of the 5 alpha females to bring down their organization from within.
Surprise! It's not a ghost episode, it's a body swap episode. Eleanor gets the drop on the middleman, takes over his body, and throws the wildest sorority party that can be produced by and broadcast on ABC Family, hoping that the lasciviousness will get the sorority shut down forever. Wendy races to the sorority, with Lewis acting as an interpreter for the middleman's spirit, and tries to figure out a way to shut down the party without getting the sorority in trouble.
This isn't just a house. It's a home for these girls. We can't take that away from them. Oh, man. I really sucked down the Kool-Aid. But come on. There's got to be another way to stop her.
Great Caesar's ghost. Does that mean something to you? He says you're absolutely right. We use the Bioharmonic Universal Multi-Module Emotional Rerouter. It's in his trunk.
The bummer?
The bummer brings everyone down, as promised, and the party ends. Eleanor, as middleman, gives them the slip, but Wendy and her allies manage to capture Eleanor and reverse the quantum processor, returning the middleman and the sorority board to their bodies. The B-plot, meanwhile, involves the tangled relationships between Wendy, her roommate Lacey, and a guy named Tyler, who appeared in a previous episode but was stricken with 2-day amnesia and is now trying to reconstruct what happened during that time. Tyler is convinced that he met a possible soulmate during his missing 2 days and assumes that Lacey is that soulmate, much to Wendy's dismay, since she is crushing on Tyler. Wendy keeps mum about her attraction to Tyler, trying to stay out of Lacey's way, but Lacey can tell something's up. Eventually, Allie, the sorority sister, intervenes and clears the air. Lacey decides to back off Tyler, and the episode ends with a flirty conversation between Wendy and Tyler outside Tyler's apartment. This episode shows so many of the elements that made the middleman so appealing. First and foremost, the show loved pop culture tropes in general and genre tropes specifically, and it loved them sincerely and earnestly, never letting that love curdle into cynicism. The Middleman was the kind of show nerdy enough that every episode contains one Wilhelm scream, and where every villain says that their plan is, quote, sheer elegance in its simplicity. It was obviously made on a shoestring budget, but that only added a certain amount of B-movie charm to the whole exercise, and it never made the mistake of taking itself too seriously. This love of pop culture manifested itself in a lot of funny, rapid-fire, reference-filled dialogue and settings. Imagine a sci-fi Gilmore Girls, and you're not too far off. The show's references often had a theme for an episode. In this case, the plot is set at Reitman University, the sorority house is on Ray Parker Jr. Drive, the hero's cover identities are Agent Stanson Zetamore of the Parapsychology Department, the super genius villain is a recipient of the Egon Spengler Award and the Evo Shandor Medal, and I'm sure there's more that I didn't catch. Reading all of these out in a row might make it sound a bit tiresome, but thankfully the show never winked at the audience too much with these references. They added spice to the mix without being a main flavor. The writing was funny and clever, too. I could spend the rest of my pitch playing clips of my favorite lines, but I'll just throw out a couple, such as when Ida acts as a fancy police scanner at the start of the episode.
We have a 27B-6.
What's up with the droid?
If she's listening to chatter.
Chatter?
CIA, NSA, Interpol, local police, they tend to ignore the important things, so we keep an ear to their frequencies for anything that might require our special touch.
Just how much special touching do we do?
Remember the mutant llama invasion of 06? The second werewolf administration? The day without wheat?
Wait, the second werewolf administration?
That particular clip also captures one of the most delightful aspects of The Middleman. How you would occasionally catch glimpses of the bigger, wonderfully strange universe the show inhabited. Another great line comes when Eleanor, as middleman, steals the middlemobile and tries to figure out where to go.
Autopilot activated. Now verifying identity. Identity verified. What is your destination?
What are my options?
Church, the creamery, top secret headquarters, the The Duck Pond?
Top Secret Headquarters.
This is also a nice character note, showing us just how straight-laced the middleman is. All of the above might make the show seem like a forgettable trifle, but it did have an emotional heart as well. A lot of the credit for that goes to Natalie Morales in her first major TV role, but Matt Kieslar and Britt Morgan, as the middleman and Lacey, give some excellent performances as well. There's a pair of weirdly touching scenes towards the end of the episode, with Wendy first getting advice from the middleman about not carrying emotional burdens alone, and then clearing the air with Lacey. You come away from the episode knowing that if you're going through tough times, your friends are there to talk to you and support you, if you'll let them. And it's reassuring to know that it's possible to save the world and get the cute boy at the end of the episode. I will admit that this episode's treatment of gender does seem a bit superficial 14 years later. Lewis's drag outfit is mostly just played for laughs. And while you'd think that a group of evil female physics super geniuses would be fascinating characters to explore, the writing barely gives Eleanor any character traits, let alone her co-conspirators. There's also a reference to the, quote, Wachowski brothers, but lands oddly today. That said, the script by Sarah Watson, who went on to create The Bold Type, does a nice job foregrounding the value of women's relationships, not just by showing Wendy and Lacey's friendship, but also by explicitly pointing out how a sorority house is a valuable space for the young women who live there and is worth saving. It's refreshing to see a piece of nerd culture that doesn't traffic in the dismissive, misogynistic treatment of, quote, girl stuff that we too often see among genre fandom. The Middleman was not the deepest show, and it was decidedly low budget, but it always felt like everyone involved was having an absolute blast making it. The show was deeply steeped in genre fiction tropes and wore its love for them on its sleeve. At the same time, it managed to make a mashup out of these tropes every week, in this case, ghost stories, college movies, and body swap comedies, that felt entirely new. To me, watching the show at its best feels like being at your best friend's house as an 8-year-old, playing with all your favorite toys, and making up entirely new stories out of the familiar characters that you love. I hope that you felt some of that joyous, goofy charm when you watched this episode, and that you will induct it into the canon.
Thank you, Mike. Devendra, you chose this from our submissions. Please start us off. What did you think of the episode and of the argument?
I fully agree with this listener. I love The Middleman. I think this is one of the strongest episodes of this show. I remember being one of those handful of people, you know, who discovered it when it was originally airing. And it felt like something special. You know, there wasn't really a geeky show like that on TV, let alone a channel like ABC Family. I feel like it was the closest we ever got in America to the olden days of Doctor Who, right? It was low budget. It was inventive, but there was a lot of imagination there, a lot of heart. I love Natalie Morales in the show, and I'm glad to see that she has continued on like with a great career. Matt Kieslar, I don't see as much around, but I know he has a bunch of credits lately. So, you know, he's still doing stuff. I love the show, though. And I have to say, because of this, I've always followed the creator, Javier Griot, Mark's Watch. Whatever he does, I tend to check it out, and I will even forgive him for that live-action Cowboy Bebop show. So I love him. I love this show, and I think this is a great episode to add to the canon. Genuinely great.
Okay, give us a little more context on that, because, the rest of us have never watched the show before this one.
Really?
So
okay.
What makes... Okay. Tell us in your own opinion, like, mm-hmm. What do you think sets this one apart?
So, okay, if you have not seen The Middleman before, then I think coming into this episode, it's like, it's a bit much, right? Like it is Gilmore Girl style, like quick patter dialogue. It is obviously low budget stuff. There is a party we see in this episode that is just people holding cups and casually mm-hmm. swaying, but it's supposed to be like a raucous scene of debauchery. Mm-hmm. You know, you gotta extend a little grace to the show because of the limitations it was at, but I love these characters. I think Natalie Morales is fantastic here. This was great, like sci-fi television, maybe a little like YA oriented, but I think it was like great low budget sci-fi stuff with great characters. This just dropped, I think it came out in like late 2000s, right? So
it was in the summer of 2008. Yeah.
Yeah. So that sounds about right. That's actually the summer before I moved to New York. So when I was like, you know, still in my college town, still hanging out with like a lot of my former, you know, college friends and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think the show has a lot going for it, mainly because it has so much heart. It has great dialogue. It's incredibly well written. Just to like hear those little bits we get from the clips we heard. We get so much like geeky. I don't know what you call it. Like it's great geeky dialogue that we mm-hmm. even still today, like don't see quite often in things. And maybe it seems overplayed. Certainly some things haven't aged well, like the Wachowski thing, like, kind of threw me because I forgot this was before either of them had transitioned, I think.
Yeah.
So that, okay, the show couldn't tell. But I think the show is genuinely great. But I can understand if you're coming to this cold turkey, if you've not entered the world of the middleman before, and just its sheer zaniness, then I could see it being a little too much for you. But I genuinely love it. I think anybody who loves geeky TV shows, if you like Doctor Who type stuff, you should check it out.
Yeah, but that's one more question, then I will take you off the spot.
Yeah.
Since you know the show, you let us know that you already own it. Is this the one that you would say is the standout of the season?
It's honestly, it's been a while since I've rewatched the entire show, but I do remember this being one of the more memorable ones, and I had a great time rewatching it. So I would, honestly, I would probably, as a better introduction to the show, I'd probably nominate the pilot, because I think it's genuinely very successful. But I did look through your list of, like, things you already have in the canon, and I saw The Middleman was not there. So that's why I chose this one. I want to show some love to The Middleman, because more people should check the show out. It's only $10 on iTunes right now, you know.
Fair enough. Sarah.
I'm glad that you made the Doctor Who comparison, because my first note was, like, having sort of read up a little bit on the show, which I had never even heard of, much less watched.
Nobody
like,
heard of
this
it. So, yeah.
Sounds Doctor Who-y, and that's not a plus for this guy. but it just has kind of like Tulsa King is a comparison I'm about to make. Like, it just like it keeps shit moving.
Getting Tulsa King vibes from the show. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, all it needs is Sly Stallone in a smart car, which, P.S., if you want me to like something, put a red smart car in it, put Patterson from Blindspot in it, Ashley Johnson, who played Eleanor. These, like, little references, like, they just blow right past, like, Ray Parker Jr. Boulevard and stuff, like, you made the cute boy go bye-bye. Like, it's moving too fast to let you dwell on places where it might be a little too cutesy, or it might look a little cheap. Like, this is absolutely a time capsule of American Eagle's summer line from that year.
Yeah.
No, I mean, true. Which I also owned in large part.
Sure.
No shade. But yeah, like, it just has an energy and a joy to it that took almost no time to win me over. Matt Keisler was recognizable to me from a Law & Order episode in which he's playing basically Kenny Kimes, except in the Law & Order verse, Sante and Kenny are fucking. Mm-hmm. And Sante is played by young Livia Soprano. Mm-hmm. So I was like, where do I know that guy from? And when I figured out where it was, I just had to pause The Middleman and be like, like, because that's just not an association that you necessarily want. But I soon forgot about that. And I just loved the energy of it. It made me want to keep watching the show, which is a key canon criterion for me. It does a good job with what I think sci-fi or supernatural-based shows need to do, which is to showcase ordinary people reacting believably to extraordinary circumstances. Like, I bought it that this was how these kids would be about all these things. And I think it also does what good young adult content does well, which is to not be like, here's a bunch of candy colors and a bunch of stripy scarves and a bunch of screaming. Like, let's just actually, like, you know, make this fun, but take the concerns of adolescence seriously without taking our show too seriously. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't have, like, a master's in YA content or anything. It's just sort of my grand unifying theory of, like, why is iCarly annoying? And this, which is cheaper and deranged, like, more like, why does this work? So yeah, like, that it dug itself so quickly out of this Doctor Who hole, frankly, that it was in from the jump, for me, is really a credit to it. And, like, I don't exactly know what's going on with the smart sponsorship, but I don't care. I was like, oh, hey, little roller skate. Like, I drove one for like 15 years. So,
aww.
Yeah. And now I'm driving the comparative SUV that is a Mini Cooper. But yeah, this was delightful. And, you know, canon presentations of shows that are like, you're already out in left field and you can't even see the show from there. Like every now and then it's like, yeah, that's what you need. It's like just something that you have no idea what it's going to be. And you suspect that it might be not for you, and then it completely is. So this was really fun. Excellent presentation, and I had a really fun time.
Great. I hope you guys watched the pilot, too. Like, it is worth checking out. Yeah.
I'll go next. I didn't like it. I was not as warmly inclined to it as Sarah was. This, I feel like it does have two halves, and when I found out that Sarah Watson, who, as Mike said, went on to create The Bold Type, when I found out she was the writer of this episode, I was like, okay, well, that explains why the relationship storyline worked better for me than the sci-fi storyline. Like, she felt like she had more investment in one than the other.
Right.
And even then, it was like, are we really doing fighting over a boy? I mean, ultimately, that's not really how it's slightly more complex than that, as Mike also said. But still, it's like, even in 2008, it's like, this feels very retrograde. And in terms of the storyline, the fact that it's set at a sorority house, like, this is a year after Greek had premiered, also on ABC Family, and it felt very much like, let's try and draft in their wake, even if they didn't necessarily know at the start of the season, like, it was not going to be a ratings winner by the time it was in episode 8. It does feel like there was a note where it's like, do something that's going to remind people of our other shows that are more successful. And, you know, some of that is going to be people calling each other sluts, but I don't really love that either. Like, the premise of the science, the sci-fi half, where it's like, they were mean to me, and therefore, as a nerd girl, this is how I'm going to take them down. It's like, are we doing this also? Like, you know, granted, it's not the show's fault that there's the Wachowski reference, but I will say, and Sarah, I'm surprised you didn't bring it up, that Lewis is played by Adrian Lelliot, who we have been seeing on Melrose Place playing David.
Oh, shit. That's so crazy.
Yes.
Didn't recognize at all.
Yeah. So this actor now uses they, them pronouns. And so, you know, all of the stuff with that character being put in drag for like frat hazing purposes. And then on top of that, like in terms of, as Devendra's saying, like coming into it cold, like the fact that it's also a body switching story means that like even the faces are not really acting the characters that we're supposed to know. So it's a lot coming into it. And ultimately it was just like,
but I thought that, like I did in Melrose, mm-hmm. I thought that actor did a great job.
That actor's great. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome.
The acting's not the problem.
I mean, everything about gendering and fat shaming and sort of being shitty to the Greek system was not great, but I was willing to grade on a curve for timing and
2008-ness. Yeah,
yeah,
I get
exactly.
It. And the American Eagle line was great. One of my notes is her pants are so low. Like she, at one point, Wendy has like her work uniform on, and it's like a white shirt with a tie, and like the tie doesn't reach her belt because her pants are so low. It's 2008.
No, because her pants have a 3-inch rise. Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, I certainly understand what it's like to have a show that you treasure that you feel didn't get enough of a shot. And I love a big swing with a presentation, and which was beautifully argued. It just did not work on me. I'm sorry, Mike. Dave.
Sci-fi version of Gilmore Girls is why I don't like this show. In Zero Dark Thirty, instead of like cranking heavy metal, they would just crank the audio of dialogue from Gilmore Girls, and it would crack in 10
Same.
Minutes. Easy.
I wish that comparison had not been made, actually, because thumbs down on that.
To me, this kind of felt like, and I didn't really think it like it was like a YA-ish thing to start off with, but it makes a lot of sense because it, to me, like the lighting, the production values, it really seemed like a Disney, 90s Disney show that was growing up with this original audience. You know, like this is, you know, Agent Cody Breakfast, but now it's like, it's 2000.
Oh, they got bigger budgets than this show. Yeah. For sure.
But it felt like that to me. And I would never watch those Disney shows when I was a kid either. Like, it just wasn't my thing. So seeing sort of like an updated kind of fun cash vibe in in a Scooby-Doo meet X-Files arena didn't really like work for me, didn't like press my buttons. I didn't really feel, like Mike said, that this felt, the mix of things it was doing felt particularly new to me. It just felt like pieces of other things that we have come to know. Obviously, like the show is very aware of what came before it, and it's sort of like using a lot of it. It's celebrating a lot of it. It is the kind of show that I imagine if you're at like a Comic-Con, a lot of people would be like, did you notice this? Did you notice that? That was kind of cool. I'm not really like into, here's a reference from something else. Wasn't that cool? Like that doesn't earn points for me. Like there's a difference between a movie like Airplane taking a trope from something and remixing it and making it kind of funny, and then just referencing things and not really doing some stuff with it. When they do the latter, it kind of bums me out because I feel like they're just trying to slipstream behind things.
Oh, yeah, showing off.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that may be the biggest weak point of this episode, that we get it. You like Ghostbusters. You don't have to list every single thing in person and character from Ghostbusters. Yeah.
I do like the energy, though. Like, I like that it is light and airy and fun, and I do understand how that would appeal. I feel like you also remember, like, this is a year after Chuck, and I mean, like, Chuck mm-hmm. is sort of the same kind
oh,
of
yeah.
show.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
And
I always forget about Chuck.
Yeah, so this is sort of like Chuck Jr. almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but Chuck never went, like, full sci-fi. It was just, like, fun spy comedy type of deal, right?
Sure, but I feel in tone in a lot of ways that I feel like I could put those two shows in a bucket. I didn't really care for Chuck either,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, I feel like if Chuck is the network version of something along these lines or the inverse relationship.
This feels like a show that Seth from the OC would be obsessed with. And that is also partially why.
Yeah, probably.
That's funny.
Not
you
sure
said
if that's
that
good or bad.
Because when they showed Tyler, I thought in the tiny thumbnail that we could see, I thought that was Adam Brody playing that part.
And it's funny, I thought that I could peg almost to the year this show was made just by the lighting style of this episode. I was like, you wouldn't think something that is just a little bit in history behind us would be so pinpointable just by the flat lighting in daytime and the harsh one light lighting they had for all their night scenes. It was like, boom, that is definitely, you know, the second half of the aughts. And it's like, yep, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of interesting to see just how much styles change. Like, obviously, this is a shoestring budget show. And to its credit, it works with that instead of wishing it had more. Like, if this was a syndicated show of the time, like this was something, well, not of the time, but like you look at all the overreaches shows like Xena and stuff like would make with their special effects, where this one's just like, fuck it, we're going to Doctor
Who. Where someone's like walking past with some oak tag that's like a cut in a dinosaur shape and just like chomping it with handles.
It's the four hefty bag monster. Oh, sure. Let's go for it. I do appreciate it.
There is a man in a gorilla suit in one of the early episodes. It's just, that is the gorilla. It's a man jumping around in a gorilla suit.
Budget is not the problem with me. It's really the Gilmore Girls of it all that sort of turned me off. But I did like the presentation, and I do know now that for two shows I've never watched before, the middleman is not Journeyman. Journeyman is the one with Kevin Kidd.
Journeyman was so good. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Justice for fucking Journeyman.
Let me see the conclusion to that story. Yeah.
We're finally going to watch that show with Kevin McKidd. Tara's like, no, that's not this one. All right.
Sorry.
Next time, maybe. There's your challenge, people. Let's get Journeyman into the canon, or at least a submission going.
Challenge accepted.
Although, speaking of crossovers with other shows that Sarah's obsessed with, this creator went on to write on Helix. So there you go.
Obsessed is...
Listen.
Several time zones over from what I was with that show.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Devendra, canon worthy or not?
I would say yes.
Sarah D. Bundy?
I agree. Yes.
Tara?
It's a no for me. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, it's a no for me. So unfortunately, ties go to the nay here on the extra hot great canon.
I thought there would be a death match or something.
The Middleman, season 1, episode 8, the ectoplasmic panhellenic investigation. You are hereby not inducted into the extra hot great canon.
But Devendra and I are coming back with a joint Journeyman presentation. Let's make it happen.
Americans love a winner.
I would love it.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
This week's winner is a kind of crossover with our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy, because Judy Blume's Forever. It's getting a series adaptation at Netflix from Mara Brock-Akil, who created Girlfriends and Being Mary Jane. She produced Black Lightning. She's out here making great shows. And this one, if you don't remember which one Forever was, I'll just say it's the sex scene one.
The one with all the dog ears in your mom's nightstand.
That's right. This is one of the dirty ones. And when this came up in my newsfeed, I was like, did I ever read this book? I may not have. I certainly read the sex scenes, though. So I'm curious to see what the rest of the story is. Guess I'll find out when it comes to Netflix. So congratulations, Judy Blume. Congratulations, Forever.
And Sarah, who is our loser this week?
Oh, boy. Well, Candace Cameron Bure proudly telling the Wall Street Journal that Great America Family, where she is now serving as chief creative officer, LOL, will prioritize, quote, traditional marriage over gay couples. Happily, though, our queen, Hillary Burton, called her a bigot and called this decision disgusting. One of the many reasons that we love Hillary Burton, Candace Cameron can kick rocks.
Speaking about disgusting decisions, you know what time it is?
Sounds like game time to me.
All right, guys, this is the fifth game time of the season. Value guests are in the driver's seat. They have 3 points. Tara, one. Sarah, nothing. Today, we are playing The Great American Road Trip from Miles Gordon, who earns himself an extra credit. Miles Gordon is a fantastic name for this game because we are going on a road trip. Many American shows are based in Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. Let's skip those and go on a TV road trip to visit shows located in other places in the USA.
Okay.
In this game, you will be given a general direction, number of miles, and the number of state lines crossed to get to the next show locale, along with a network and year the show premiered.
Okay.
For 2 points, name that show. If you need a hint, I will give you the name of two of the top four characters involved with that television program. Okay. Then the answer is worth 1 point. You can guess at each level. So you can guess at the 2 points, and then you can guess after the hint again.
Okay.
For example, we start our road trip in Los Angeles. We travel east 787 miles, cross two state lines to visit a show that premiered in 2008 on AMC. What would that show be?
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad is that show, yes.
Okay.
If you needed a hint, I would have told you like Jesse and Skyler or something like that.
Okay.
Shows can be scripted or unscripted, but the location is always a real, actual place.
Okay.
No fictional towns here.
Okay.
You do not need to name the location, just the show.
Okay.
Distances are based on Google directions, as is the number of state lines crossed.
Wow. I'm impressed. Well done, Miles, for doing the research.
Show is the network that it premiered on, not necessarily the one that it is on these days.
Okay.
It happened to move. So you're going to get the premiere network.
Got it.
And we're going to start in Los Angeles again. Okay, Tara.
Yes.
We start in Los Angeles, traveling north-northwest, 382 miles, crossing no state lines. We are visiting a show from ABC in the year 1987. You can take a stab at this show at this point for 2 points.
Okay. ABC 1987, it's the Bay Area, I assume. How many miles?
382.
Okay. I can't even think of anything. I'll take the hint.
We've got Joey and Jesse.
Full House.
1 point. Devendra. From San Francisco, we are heading north, 641 miles. We're crossing one state line to a show that aired on IFC in 2011.
Portlandia.
Portlandia is correct. Yes. Sarah D. Bunting from Portlandia. I mean, from Portland. Heading north again, 174 miles. Crossing one state line, ABC 2005.
ABC 2005. That seems like it's going to be Seattle, but I can't pull a show, so I need a hint, please.
Meredith and Miranda.
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy, good for one. Back to Tara.
Yes.
From Seattle, we're heading south-southeast, 726 miles, crossing three state lines.
Oh, no.
This show was on NBC in 1959.
What? Ugh, just go ahead with the hint.
Ben and Little Joe.
Is that... When is it? Is that Bonanza?
It is Bonanza.
Wow. What's the matter? You don't like Bonanza?
Virginia City, Nevada is where we ended up there. So, Devendra, from Virginia City, Nevada, we are heading east, 525 miles, crossing one state line for this show that started on HBO in 2006.
I'm going to need a hint.
Bill and Barb. Bill and Barb.
I have no clue.
No clue? The answer there, anybody, for Shits and Grins?
It's Big Love.
Big Love.
Yes.
Salt Lake City, Utah.
My wife loved that show, but I never really got into it.
It's fine.
From Salt Lake City, Utah, Sarah, we're heading east, southeast, 586 miles, crossing two state lines for a show that started on CBS in 1993.
What's the direction again?
East, southeast.
East, southeast. Yep. Crossing two state lines from... Hint.
We've got Byron and Brian. And one other character I can't tell you because it's a big giveaway. It might be in the title.
Mm. Byron and Brian?
Yeah.
Well, Ben Sonia. I don't know the answer.
We are in Colorado Springs, Colorado for Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman there.
Oh. I think I knew that's where it was set.
All right. So from there, Tara, heading southeast, 725 miles, we are crossing two state lines. This show started in 1978 on CBS.
Why? Trapper John, MD.
Your hint?
Yeah.
Sue Ellen and JR.
Ugh, Dallas.
Dallas, good for one.
This is where my lack of geography knowledge is really going to hurt me.
All right, Devendra from Dallas, heading south. 195 miles, crossing zero state lines. This show started on Fox in 2020.
Lone Star is good for two points.
Nice.
Again, my wife's TV
Stars
habits.
At night.
Great.
Big and bright.
All right, that is, of course, right here in Austin, where me and Tara are coming from. So, Sarah, from Austin, heading east-northeast, 431 miles, crossing one state line. This show started 2012 on A&E.
A&E, crossing one state line. Sorry, the direction again, please?
East, northeast. So that's mostly east with a little north in it.
Yeah, mostly east, a little north in it. Got it. A&E?
A&E. Yeah.
And it's not all scripted shows, you said.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, got it. That doesn't help me. True Blood.
A&E, of course, famously known for True Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Two characters we're talking about, Willie and Corey, K-O-R-I-E. Willie and Corey.
Fake Blood. I don't know the answer to this question.
Is it Duck Dynasty?
Duck Dynasty.
Wow. Oh, fuckers.
West Monroe, Louisiana.
Oh, sorry, Annabeth.
So from there, Tara, heading southeast, 290 miles, crossing one state line.
Mm-hmm.
This show is from Amazon from 2015.
Oh. What shows even were on Amazon in 2015 is the question. I know it's not Bosch.
Mozart in the Bayou,
Los Angeles.
I'm just gonna put it out there. This is not one of the big shows.
I'll take the hint then.
Okay. Tig and Bill.
Oh, it's One Mississippi.
That is from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, of course. And there is only one Mississippi. Devendra, heading east-southeast from there, 640 miles. We're crossing two state lines for this show that aired on TNT in the year 2017.
TNT had shows in 2017?
Yeah.
hint, please.
We've got Desna and Quiet Anne.
Oh.
I'm trying to think, like, TNT still existed back then.
Based on what I know so far, there's a good chance your wife watches this show.
I was
going to
say the same thing.
Yeah. I got nothing.
That's Claus.
Claus. Yes. Claus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And does she watch that
one? I actually watched that one. I just forgot the names. Yeah.
That is from Palmetto, Florida.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Sarah D. Bunting heading north, 444 miles, crossing one state line. This is a show on TLC from 2012.
Mm. Oh. Fuck. Honey Boo Boo.
I'll give that to you. Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Oh, nicely done.
Wow.
McIntyre, Georgia is where that show takes place. So from McIntyre, Georgia, Tara.
Yes.
Heading northwest,
mm-hmm.
360 miles,
mm-hmm.
crossing one state line.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 2012 show that started on ABC.
Nashville?
2 points from Nashville. Nice. In Nashville. Very convenient. Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Next for Devendra. From Nashville, we're heading northwest, 486 miles. We're crossing three state lines.
Ooh.
Netflix, 2017.
You know, I don't like the show, but the name is escaping me right now because I know the
Describe
show.
Describe it.
The not quite Breaking Bad. The lesser Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
Bad.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hint.
All right. Marty and Wendy.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Let me just say, you are correct in your where you're going, Devendra.
Chen is obsessed with the show and not in a good way.
It's just in this moment, and I am very tired right now. I cannot think of the name.
You're going to get a text about it. That's all I'm saying.
What is the show called? I just think blue. That's all I think. It's blue. It's very blue.
They mm-hmm. they like their gels.
They all like their gels. Yeah.
We're going to call you on time on that one. Anybody want to put him out of his misery?
That's Ozark.
It's Ozark.
Ozark.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's how little I think of Ozark. By the way,
I thought you were going to say that's how little I think of Dave Chen's taste.
No, it's I think it was Jeff who more is into Ozark. But yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Chen watched it and hated it.
Yep.
He just couldn't.
But he watched all of it. Yeah.
He did. Yeah.
So that is Osage Beach, Missouri.
Yes.
So from there, Sarah D. Bunting, we're heading northwest. 158 miles, one state over for a show that started on Showtime in 2009.
L Word?
It is not L Word. Your hint? Max and Tara. Sorry, Max and Tara, I believe.
Max and Tara.
Yeah.
United States of Tara?
Correct.
Wow.
Hey!
Oh, nice.
That takes place in Overland Park, Kansas.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
All right. It is time for our score break. We are over halfway done. Tara, let's get them scores.
Them scores is tight. Devendra and Sarah are tied with 4 points each. I am barely ahead with 6.
All right. Let's get right back into it. From Overland Park, Kansas, Tara, heading northwest, traveling 748 miles, mm-hmm. crossing two state lines for a show that started on HBO mm-hmm. in 2004.
Um, 2004 on HBO. Hint.
Seth and Al.
Oh, Deadwood.
Deadwood, yes. Deadwood, South Dakota. So, Devendra, from there, we're heading directly east, 477 miles, one state over, for this 1974 show that started on NBC. Do you know the next state over?
That's the first question. That's the first question. General Hospital.
General Hospital is incorrect. Good clue if you know the show. Your characters are Laura and Charles, otherwise known as Ma and Pa.
No, Laura's not Ma.
No, got nothing.
Oh, that's right. Laura's the, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Half Pint.
Pass.
Anybody?
Little House.
Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, Little House on the Prairie. Walnut Grove, Minnesota.
Would the mime and Sylvia have helped? No.
So, from Walnut Grove, Minnesota, for Sarah, heading northeast, 146 miles, crossing no state lines, CBS 1970.
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yes.
Nice.
Mary Tyler Moore. So, that is in Minneapolis. From there, Tara Ariano.
Yes.
We're heading southeast, 300. 37 miles crossing one state line for this show that started on ABC in 1974.
Oh, fuck. I was like, I had picket fences locked and loaded. I'm not even sure if that's right. That was in Wisconsin. Is that anywhere near Minnesota? I truly don't know. Hint.
Richie and Arthur.
Oh, Happy Days.
Happy Days,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so I had the right state.
You did. Milwaukee was the town in Wisconsin. All right, so from there, Devendra, heading east, 373 miles, crossing three state lines. This is a show that started on ABC in 1991.
Doogie Howser?
Incorrect. Your character hints are Tim and Wilson.
Oh, Home Improvement.
Home Improvement is correct.
That's
good
not
for
what
one.
I was thinking at all.
No, me either.
Home Improvement took place in Detroit. So from Detroit, Sarah D. Bunting, heading south, 138 miles, crossing one state line. This show started on Fox in 2009.
Empire.
Empire is not right. You've got Rachel and Sue.
Oh.
Sue.
Rachel and Sue. 2009. I don't know.
Anybody?
Glee.
Oh,
Sue. In Ohio.
From your favorite bean, Ohio. Lima beans.
Lima, Ohio. Or maybe it was Lima. It might have been Lima.
I think it's Lee. I think it's pronounced Lima. Yeah. So from there, Tara, traveling south, 365 miles, crossing one state line. What?
Add Ohio. It could be anywhere. It could be anywhere. I have no mental picture for it at all.
Just a black hole in this country.
Yeah. Crossing
between
one state
Indiana
line.
And Pennsylvania.
We could be in Idaho. I have truly no idea. Go on.
All right, so from there,
yes,
south, 365 miles, crossing one state line. Just one state
we're not
away,
in
Tara.
Idaho.
All you need to know, one state away.
Okay, okay.
This is a 2010 show from FX.
Okay. Oh, this is probably Justified.
It is Justified. Harlan County, Kentucky. All right. From Harlan County, Kentucky, Devendra, we're heading east, northeast, 502 miles, crossing four state lines.
That's too many.
It is.
For this HBO show that started in 2002.
Sopranos.
No, not far enough for that. We've got Jimmy and Cedric.
Carnival?
Incorrect. Anybody?
Mean to give their first names. That's The Wire.
Yes, that's McNulty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we've got that taking place in Baltimore. So, we've got Sarah D. Bunting from Baltimore, northeast, 103 miles, crossing two state lines for this show that started on ABC in 2021.
I'm thinking. You can hear the ribbon of smoke rising yeah. from my ears as I say that it is.
I'm probably going to have to boost that in post, but yeah.
Abbott Elementary?
Correct. That's what I would have said! Whoa.
That is correct.
Good job, Sarah.
Everybody's last question is ahead of them, so let's quickly get scores.
Oh my God, it's so close. Devendra has 5, Sarah has 8, I have 10.
All right, let's get back into it. Everybody's last question. Tara.
Good luck.
From Philadelphia,
yeah.
where Abbott Elementary is set, yeah. we are heading east.
Okay.
Only 67 miles.
Oh, okay.
One this... state line over.
Oh, no! I thought I had it and I don't. Okay.
For this show,
yeah.
from MTV in 2009.
Oh, no. An MTV show. Is this like, oh, God. Is it like, is it Jersey Shore?
It is Jersey Shore.
Nice. Wow, good nice. Pick. I was trying to pull that show with Milena Govich, but it was too early.
Oh, yeah, right. God. I was sure it was The Office when you said 67 miles and then you said state line.
So from Seaside Heights, New Jersey, for Devendra, we've got a northeast trip lasting 196 miles. It is going to cross 2 state lines. The show is a CBS show from 1999.
Probably my home state. Can I have a hint?
What is your home state?
Connecticut.
It might be.
Yeah.
Your hint is Amy and Maxine.
I didn't watch CBS shows back then.
And your wife watched this one.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
And she's like, I love that title character, Amy. And I'm not even passing judgment on the show. I'm just saying I love Amy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got nothing.
Dave, Jesus.
That is Judging Amy.
Judging Amy.
Yes.
I forgot that show existed.
Yeah.
To be honest.
It's not streaming.
Good.
And it's a
Someone crime. Needs to
it's
bring
a
it back.
Show.
Yeah.
All right. So our last question, starting from Hartford, home of the Whalers.
My hometown.
Yay.
Yar.
There's nothing to be excited about. It's just Hartford.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, we're heading northeast from Hartford, Connecticut, home of Devendra Hardawar originally. Mm-hmm. Northeast, 101 miles crossing just one state line. This is a show from Fox from 97.
Crossing Ooh. One state line. It's a show from Fox. I mean, I can't win, so I'm tempted to burn the 2-pointer on something like Rhode Island Idol.
Ghost Hunters. Yeah.
Hint, please.
Allie and Vonda.
Sure.
Oh, God, right. Okay. Allie McBeal.
Yeah. I would probably not have said Allie as a hint earlier in the game, but here we are. I think the game has already been decided. Let's find out for sure with our end of regulation scores, please.
Hard-fought game from all combatants. Devendra finished with 5, Sarah with 9. I have 12.
All right. Nicely done. Before we make this official, let's use our tiebreaker. The winner removes 1 steel mill from everybody else.
Ooh!
We're going to reduce steel mill counts.
Okay.
Here. So, from Boston, we are heading west-southwest, 293 miles, crossing 3 state lines. We'll lock that in, triangulate. Beep, bop, bloop. This show is from 2005 on NBC.
The Office.
The Office is super duper fast, correct. Nicely done. So Sarah knocks off 1 steel mill from each of her competitors,
oh,
but
dang.
Tara wins the day.
Good job, Tara.
Tara.
Nicely done. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We opened up our AAA triptychs to visit Sylvester Stallone in Tulsa King before going around the dial with stops at The Big Brunch, The Crown, Atlanta, The Good Fight, and Prince Andrew, Banished. On its canon journey, the middleman couldn't get past the bitchiest club of them all, the EHG gang that is me and Tara, apparently. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Miles Gordon. Next up is Chris Nostalgia and Fleshman is in Trouble. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
That's it. Back to Winnipeg.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I thought you were nerd jerky.
And Devendra Hardawar.
Justice for the middleman.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grit.
I'm sorry, but time just doesn't stop because you fucking went away.
That is from Osage Beach in... Where the hell is that?
Ozarkia?
What the hell is M.O.?
Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Missouri.
Well, what was M.S.?
Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Oh, okay. I fucked up the last one. All right. Sorry. Sorry, people in Missouri and...
they get it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
For a bunch of reasons.
I wasn't even paying attention that the show is called One Mississippi and you still said Missouri.
Yeah. I think I will just record a correction right here, right now to Fair reduce enough. Confusion. Mm-hmm. That is from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, of course. And there is only one Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.